Como dijo, ¿y cómo fue? Chomita Chronicles, say yes, I'm here. Yes, we are here. We are here. I don't know, I talk about we because ustedes son los que me apoyan y entonces estamos en esta conversación. 2023, Chomita Chronicles, ha sido una cosa increíble. No le puedo decir cómo fue el 2022. Gracias por su apoyo. Gracias por escuchar este show. Y seguir. Y obviamente ven que estamos haciendo cosas diferentes y estamos haciendo video. Y espero que lo disfruten. Y ya, yo dejo de hablar. I always say, I'm going to stop talking. And I have my guests. They are part of the digital magazine. Ebony Tomatoes Collective. I always think about it because I'm like, I'm so excited, but I'm going to say it. Ebony Tomatoes Collective. And I have part of their team, curators, editors, writers, but they're going to introduce themselves and I'm going to just lead the mic. Go ahead, Leslie.
Okay. So my name is Leslie Vargas. I am a co-founder and the editorial manager of Ebony Tomatoes Collective. We are a multimedia publication that only publishes the work of Black women and Black non-binary people. Y queremos más gente, you know, Afro-Latina. I want to see more of us because we are getting a majority, like, African-American, a lot of people from Africa, too, from, like, all these different places, and it's wonderful, but we exist, too, and I feel like I want to be on this podcast with Jalisa, my beautiful friend right here.
Go ahead, Jalisa.
Hola, estás? I'm Ebony Tomato. I'm one of their video editors, and I'm just, like, blessed to be here and just continuously blessed to be a part of Ebony Tomatoes and just, continuing this journey.
Awesome, awesome. So, you know, I want to get into it because, you know, the conversation is definitely interesting. I am going to ask Leslie or Jalisa, if you can correct me also as well. Tell me a little bit about your background for our guests, our listeners. Where you want to start?
You can go first if you want.
Okay. So I could say my background in general, I'm definitely a filmmaker. I'm a film editor. I've started in the industry when I was 15 years old in a nonprofit program in Chinatown. And ever since then, I have been in vast minority of different spaces in the industry working on their documentary and narrative work. I've even like internationally traveled to Russia at one point in my life to create a documentary film. But I've been working with community organizers in the past. I'm using my film content, my documentary content to spread mental health awarenesses and also like show like inclusivity and like make sure people can like represent their identity and their voices.
Okay. Now, for just the purpose of this podcast, you know, I always kind of ask people, how, como te criaste? Will you tell us a little bit about that? Just, you know, how you were brought up, where you're from, you know.
I'm Dominican, Puerto Rican. Okay. I was born and raised in Hell's Kitchen, and my family has been here since the 70s. And this in our entire area was Puerto Rican run for a while till like inflation and gentrification, of course. But and then on my Dominican side, I have an entire family back in Santo Domingo. My dad has migrated here 2 years before I was born. So, yeah, I very much come from a background of just like of history and
diversity.
And just like I have been so used to living in a world of community and like understanding the realities of our consistent like of our consistent like existence. Just like
everything. And Leslie, can you tell us about your story a little bit?
So I'm still in school right now. I'm in my third year. I'm majoring in entrepreneurship and business management, which is why I'm like managing Ebony Tomatoes. The experience has been really cool because I'm also a writer, like first and foremost. I've written one book so far. And I'm planning on writing more. And I want to write more books like about our culture, which I have like a biography I'm kind of working on my grandfather's life growing up in Santo Domingo.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm Dominican. Both my parents are from the same small town, born out, República Dominicana.
Wow.
They've known each other since they were born, basically.
Wow.
My grandparents even worked together in like the bank and like in the pharmacy and stuff in town. Very small town. So yeah, I'm like first generation here. I was born in Manhattan, but I moved around a lot. I lived in Connecticut, Virginia, Florida, New Jersey.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Nice. Amazing, amazing. So anyways, the reason that we just gathering, and I like the fact that what they're doing, that's why we're here, because we need more voices. Necesitamos gente que hable, que escriban, que filmen. Y entonces, que estas historias sigan saliendo. Ustedes dicen, pero ¿por qué necesitamos más gente? La comunidad está creciendo. It's growing. However, I think where I'm coming from is now, it's the social economic equality for our art, for our writing to be seen. And yes, social media covers a much, but it has to be across the board. But, you know, digital versus traditional media everywhere. And the more we keep on pushing this envelope, we're going to be seeing, you know, what's going on. So I would like for you guys to tell me, okay, what is the project that you most admire? Like, you already spoke about where you're heading, but currently, right now, where the word actually, the title of your Ebony Tomatoes Collective, what does that mean? How did you guys came about it since, you know?
So Ebony Tomatoes comenzó como un grupo, like it was a writer's group, and our leader, her name is Ava. She's amazing. She's our editor-in-chief. She was like, okay, I want to make a publication with us. This, what we have here, needs to be seen. We need to be heard. And we were just joking around. And she said, I don't want anything like Ebony this or Black this. Like, I feel like she said, she feels like that's corny. And I was like, I don't know. Like, what about Ebony Tomatoes? And she said that she was like blushing. And I said she was like a tomato. And then I was like, what about Ebony Tomatoes? And then that just became, it was a joke.
Wow.
Now it's not a joke anymore.
But yeah.
Oh. Okay. So that's so interesting. So my podcast is all about acceptance, identity, you know, the conversation of what some people will say, well, what I am or who I am. And then just feeling finally, for myself, after I started podcasting for 4 years, finally having a space that I'm like, oh my God, I can be both. I'm accepted. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. Tell me your journey, or tell me your, you know, how you correlate your current career with that acknowledgement personally, and how you know, you guys are bringing it together. If you want to go ahead, Janissa.
I feel like when it goes to definitely within our careers, it is a battle to try to assimilate with communities that are from different spaces, and just trying to trying to resonate, but also also not deal with the big disconnect, because I feel like as a community now, especially within our generation, we are more open to like being around vast varieties of different people, and just like, you know, more comfortable getting to know one another. But I think one of the hardest things is still trying to look for that comfortability and socialization in these spaces, because especially when you're coming from a space before where you didn't have that privilege to self-express yourself based on your mm-hmm. own identity and your own self. And just like, yeah, just trying to, I think, I know with me personally, I tried to just, I'm just constantly just trying to become a better person in all these spaces, and trying to like work through my shadow and not try to project based off of being in spaces before and not like feeling like I was accepted, to now in this, in these career spaces now, just like, I think the biggest thing is loving myself first.
Yes.
loving myself first, because I feel like if you do not love yourself first, it's going to be hard for you to stimulate in different spaces with different people. And you're going to constantly feel judged. And you're going to constantly feel like that. You're going to constantly feel isolated. So I feel like when you bring that love to yourself, love your culture, and love who you are, where you came from, it's going to be easier for you to like navigate your confidence no matter where you go.
Right. Can I speak for maybe all of us? At some point, we definitely fell in this code switching, minimizing who we were, because obviously we grow and we are unlearning and relearning things all over again in a better perspective. Tell me about how you say, like you say, do you colorism, race, and corporate culture, how does that navigate in your ideas, Leslie, in that sense? It really, I think also, like, since you are co-founder, mm-hmm. you have a leg up, but then the how you are hearing and projecting to you, to the rest of your team, you know, how do you do that?
So it depends on what you want to be too. So nosotros estamos en something very artistic,
yes.
You know? So it's different. You know, we are not trying to be lawyers. We're not trying to be doctors. It's different because that, that's, it's just, and I'm trying to like explain this properly. Being in those spaces is drastically different than being in artistic spaces. Artistic spaces are like, known for being a little more accepting, not always, mm-hmm. but they're known for being a little more accepting, you know? And for Ebony Tomatoes, I am like a manager, right? I'm supposed to be like the business person, the financial person. And I've learned that you have to lead with kindness. You know, a lot of the times we think that in order to be great, we have to emulate whiteness and act like how a white person would act, but that's not the case. The way we are can also make us successful. The way we are is enough. So in Ebony Tomatoes, if we have an issue, we have to lead first with kindness. We have to be nice to each other. Ava always says, this is a family. We are not going to treat each other with disrespect. We are not going to tolerate disrespect. And first and foremost, everybody has to be comfortable. So it's important when anyone like does a good job for me to tell them that they did a good job. When we finished our Instagram live with you, I told her, I said, you did an amazing job. Like you're amazing. And that's so important.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. So if you're listening to this podcast, you can go ahead and check out their pages. Well, once you finish listening to this podcast, we are going to do a little break. Yes, a little break. You know, you guys, I have the blessing to have sponsors and integrate, you know, ideas. But I will definitely tell you, check out the pages, my page and login. That there's an IG live where we were like kind of doing some trendy topics, but also important topics for the Afro-Latino community. And I want to put a link in the show notes. Okay, girls. So take it over. Tell me exactly what is important to you guys at this point. I usually always ask my guests, and, you know, either one can take the turn. Where were you when the George Floyd situation happened? Have you guys... And I have, it's a two questions. Where were you? And after that sad event, George Floyd event, have things changed?
I was with my mom when the George Floyd incident happened, because I was staying over at her house during the pandemic. And so I wasn't able to be around like the protests, but I was able to like virtually compensate for everything that was going on. And I was holding IG live conversations for people that wanted to vent about the situation, because there was a lot of people that were affected emotionally, including myself. And It was also a big trigger for me because my mom is personally a cop and has been in the force for 20 plus years. And as much as I respect her grind and I respect where she put herself within the field, it was also a big clash of trying to her me trying to understand each other's relationship based off of her her job and what she built for herself. So we have definitely came to a middle ground. We respect one another, but it's good to be in a space right now that I have my own truth and she has hers, and we both understand each other's truth. So yeah, it was an emotional time for me, but I was able to confidently heal through that and build better relationships with people that in my space.
What about you, Leslie?
For me, I believe I was in my room, and you know, when I heard, and I feel like for us, it's very terrifying, especially thinking about our fathers, our brothers, just walking outside the house. Definitely, I lost a lot of, not a lot, but I lost a couple of friends based on some of the things they were saying.
Yes.
In a situation like that, there is no but this, there is no but that.
It's the humanity. Yeah, it's the humanity.
Yeah. And it was just, I feel like it made us so angry, and it was hard to find, you know, peace during that time. And also, there was a lot of performative activism going on at that time. And that, you know, that really hurts, you know. People that I consider my friends asking me why I'm not protesting, why I'm not out on the street, like these white friends, and also posting, oh, I'm at a protest. It's not funny. It's not a joke.
It's not.
And the amount of people I saw, suddenly claiming they were a person of color. I had a friend that she's white, but she's half Filipino, and we were talking, and she's never once in her life really claimed that side of herself. She's always said she was white. She presents as a white person, and during that time she told me I'm a woman of color, I'm a woman of, and that I remember everyone around her looked at her.
I think I even did a meme about that, as some people calling themselves Afro-Latina, and you're like,
oh my God.
And it's just so nerve-wracking. But then I want to just highlight something. The reason that we always mark the timeline for George Floyd is because it was televised. But we're not taking off the credit of the ones that were not televised, that it has occurred to them, you know, in the hands of the authority, police, or whatever they have been, you know, this, it just marks such a pinnacle moment, because it really was a Pandora box that opened, and it just let a lot of people finally speak out. We have really been talking about this, like they will say, behind the scenes, but finally we had the voice to now say, okay, this is what's going on, and you guys need to listen. Not only that, that same lens was literally put it on top of us and say, well, what about Latinos? You guys, don't you have an issue? And to look to our own self-hate and acceptance, you know, and problems and within our family. So go ahead.
I also feel like in those moments as Latinos, because of our ethnicity and our race always coming in question, we don't know when it's time for us. Como el momento que tenemos que hablar y el momento donde tenemos que, okay, it's your turn.
Seeing,
it's not my time to talk, it's your time, and I'm here to listen to you. And that was a moment where, because a lot of us are not African American,
correcto,
but then we still are treated because we present as Black people, you know, Black parents, Black brother, Black mother, Black father, but I'm not Black.
See, sí, en Castilla, it's like nobody asked me if I was, you know, I definitely know I'm Black. I'm presenting Black, and everybody's like, no. I believe that somebody, you know, I check off, but I'm like, primarily, I'm Latina, and I can be both. And that's what was happening. 10 years back, you're like, no, you just only black. I'm like, listen, I'm like, are you confusing me or not? Oh, I'm actually being clear. Now I can say I can be both. No, and it's okay.
Yeah, I was talking to my mom like 2 days ago, and I was talking about Ebony Tomatoes. Y ella me dijo, no, pero tú eres más negra. Oh, no, you're more Latina than you are black. And I'm like, the thing you just said doesn't even make any sense. Latinas are black. It's not one or the other. It's they exist together.
Yes.
And like, because, and that's because Latinidad is not seen as people who are Latino are not seen as black. Like there's black, there's white, there's people that present more indigenous.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, there's an American over there. Okay, is that American white? Is that American black? Are they Latino? Like,
correct.
It's definitely a big thing culturally too, where like I feel like it made me really learn that there's so much different forms of racism, and Americanized racism is so like, it's so weirdly complex because we like half the time we can't even resonate with it because it is so boxed in a set. Like, for example, like, yeah, because like our families is like, you're not that black. And it's like, what does that even mean? Like, and I feel like when they say that, and this is me trying to understand their perspectives from the colonization of their head, is that we're not the stereotypical black person that America portrays on our identities. And I think that's, I'm assuming that's what they're talking about. And it's just like, it's like, you know, it's okay to admit your race and also like hold pride into your ethnicity at the same time. And it's like, when you bring that conversation to the table, everyone just feels conflicted.
Conflicted because it's like African-American's history for the one, it's like, remember, the votes came across the transatlantic slave trade was everywhere. But then the way that the Africans that were enslaved in the United States and how they were treated, that's where, you know, we have an issue. To discuss this, basically right now what's happening in Santo Domingo and the cleansing of the community,
that is an entire issue. And I've taken it like upon myself to go directly to sources, Haitian sources, and ask them, okay, what should I read to better understand what you're telling me right now? What should I look into? Because talking to our grandparents as Dominicans is not the answer.
Oh, yeah.
Because of some of the things they say, yo estaba en una discusión grandísima in Thanksgiving with my grandfather. Because I told him, I was like, the things you say are very racist. The things you think are very racist. And he's like, no. No me diga eso. Like, you have to respect me. And I'm like, I'm coming to you with respect. And the way that they thought of racism was very violent. So they think racism.
They're so old school. They don't see it. They don't perceive it. Mm-hmm. Versus the generation now that is like,
yeah, lo que está pasando en Haití ahora. And the culture of Dominican Republic and Haiti is so violent. Trujillo like killed so many people. Do you know what Perejil is? The Perejil massacre.
Yes.
And not only did he kill so many Haitians, he killed so many Dominicans too, just for being black. And like, to me, like, I would never understand that. Trujillo's whole thing was Trujillo before God. Like, that was his whole thing. And he wanted to mejorar la raza, which is something we hear a lot.
My ordeal is really, you know, it's like, I think I even said to somebody, I said, Haiti is poor on paper, but Haiti has its resources. The only, unfortunately, the political structure system, we are not going to really get into really that much in the podcast, but I really want to make people aware of what's going on. Like, you know, even Leslie, you know, you have the responsibility to do your research and, you know, understand. My thing also, where I come from, is Haiti is going through and economic, structural, and systematic, and imperialism right now. But then having the United States also get involved and then pushing an envelope on the Dominican Republic is like from a poor country to another poor country is like, where are we going with this? Nobody is resolving the matter because you want to impose. But then adding to the fact also xenophobia, anti-racism, and everything else, and not accepting. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's like, you're not, where's the progress? Yes, uh-huh. Voices like you, and I'm glad that you are tapping on those resources to understand better what's going on. I definitely believe that there's a financial fact about it.
Definitely.
And the fact that obviously some people, because it's like you got to find the paper trail. Some people are getting benefit out of this chaos. And I want to just extend, my understanding, my heart to my Haitian listeners, my Dominican listeners, because it's really, really difficult.
I think a big problem is the dehumanization of Haitian people in Dominican Republic. Ellos son gente. Ellos tienen familia, hijos. Ellos son gente. Trabajado. Like, they work so hard. Yes. And they're people. And this is not, Haiti is not a piece of land. Haiti is the people. And these people are our family. Quisqueya, the Dominican Republic in Haiti, that's one island. And that's the mindset we need to have, that this is one island. And again, we need to show kindness to people. And it's like you just said, Yobi, like, it's money. There is a paper trail. I was talking to a Haitian friend of mine, and I was talking about the Eiffel Tower. And I told him, oh, your last name is the same name as the park in the Eiffel Tower. And he was like, you want to know something? The Eiffel Tower was built with the money that they forced Haiti to pay. I didn't know that. I will never go there again. I will never go there again. Because
that's a big difference. I gotta tell you, I am very grateful to myself. I'm like, I've been to Paris, I've been to France, and then there's something in the back of my mind. I'm like, should I really go? Should I really spend my money there? Because it's like the point is, any country that that has become independent was thanks to the independence and freedom that Haiti was. That's how it started. That's how Simón Bolívar got help, And then it's like, by then, fast forward today, seeing what that country is going through and being penalized over and over again, it's just really heartful. It just hurts so much.
Haiti is the reason slavery was ended in the Dominican Republic. Haiti is the reason. And even thinking about France, you colonized that part of our island. And then you asked us to pay. And then with that money, you built a tower, but people are starving.
Yeah. And it was. And like, go ahead.
Yeah. No, sorry. But
no, it was the reparations of the people that lost their land,
But and also, it's that whole thing, the white American mindset. In America, where do you go to get culture? You go to Europe. Where do you go? Like, that's what they push on us. And they tell us that the countries where we come from are third world and they're dangerous. Don't go to Africa. Don't go to Dominican Republic. Don't go to Panama. Don't go to Ecuador. Don't go there. Go to Europe. Even our mindset is to give them money. Give white people money. I was like, I am going to get that out of my head. Like, do you know that there's a whole country in Africa where it was colonized by Spain and they speak Spanish?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Equatorial Guinea.
Yes, I'm learning. I'm still learning, but I was like, oh my God, yes, yes.
They don't tell us that, but they tell us to go to France and Spain, and we go and we're not accepted. And it reminds me of this story. This Jamaican man, he was like making a video, and he was saying, he's like, I'm from Jamaica, and we're part British because the British colonized. And people tell me, wow, you go back to Africa, but why don't you go back to England? And he said, you think they're going to accept me. He said he was a black man. He's like, I'm a black man. I go to England, they'll treat me bad. He said, when I went to Africa with my Jamaican passport from the Caribbean, you know what they told me? Welcome home. And I was like, that's such a...
And that also has another layer, but we don't... I unfortunately, we don't have the time to touch everybody because then, and I really would like to talk to somebody from Ecuador and Guinea, as for that matter of fact, because I feel like I said, for the ones that are there, they have an advantage that at least they know some part of their, you know, ancestry and past more clear than us that are here in this continent and Latin America, that we really need to kind of search again. And I highlight you guys, check out our Instagram live. We talk about it a little bit. And you were going to say about that topic. I want to think, like, the reason that I do this podcast is also to highlight the things that we're making, the difference, the changes, positive, that can enhance, that can highlight, that can inspire, motivate others to say, hey, you're not alone in this, and how can I contribute? Jadisa, can you tell me anything, you know, what are the good things that are happening in our community?
I feel like this is just based off experience, I feel like younger generations are reclaiming and elevating the history and energy of our cultures. And like the biggest example, I feel like that is that's showing that elevation is like, honestly, like musically is like Bad Bunny, and just like that, it has felt like a reset of just like, now we are, especially Gen Z are now like tapping back, and not just tapping back into our culture, but also deconstructing and decolonizing the stuff that we were used to and growing up with. And it has, I feel like it really has become a new era of us just like, of reclaiming. And we're in a process of figuring out how to do that and continuing to educate ourselves on how to do that.
Right. So I noticed, actually, I think now it was discussed in the Instagram live, but then recently you guys covered about, I guess, this creative about the Puerto Rican bronze with the rolos, like it's an image.
Yeah. Boricua Morena.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. By the way, actually, it was originally published in 2020, but it's just now it's been circling and going viral. That was such an interesting piece. And about this artist, you know, or creative, that she put it together.
Yeah. She is actually amazing. So the story of it. So I was just on TikTok and I saw her and I was like, okay, we have to get her. So I texted her, I DM'd her actually through Instagram, and she was like, oh my God, I would love to be a part of it. And she told me that her mom and her grandma actually did all the hair, but she had her family doing that. And she's a stylist. And I think she's one of the models too.
Yes. Yeah. She's like, my mommy was doing the lighting. I was literally reading all the credits. You guys, obviously the link is going to be in the show notes, but it's a really good feature, like the rolo, el tubi-tubi. It's just that sense of embracing the culture, even la chancletas. Oh, it's like, oh my goodness, that took me back.
The maltas, they were all drinking maltas. It was everything. And oh my gosh, when I saw that, I literally called my aunt, because me and her talk about this a lot, about being Black and Latina, because she in her family, she is, I think, the darkest skinned woman, and she's been through a lot with that, in her own way. But I show her, I was like, look, because that's being Dominican and Puerto Rican. Like, we keep our tubi thing whenever, and we're put together with that on, and we look good in us. And that's what I felt from that.
We claimed it at that time too, and I feel like what I liked about the piece so much is that it reclaims back that history for us. I loved it so much.
Right. Oh my God, they really got me with the chancletas and the little bees. Like, I was like, this girl got everything, the pieces, the pins. You guys have to check it out. What are the other highlights that you guys can see? Okay, from this point on, since I already touched that, what can we see coming up next? I really believe that Gen Z is taking the lead in this conversation and, you know, understanding. And hopefully, I want to also make sure that by the time you guys get to listen to this podcast, it's going to be past the holidays. But how can we work with the persons that want to learn, that they're open mind, that are willing to understand and say, okay, can I see? Because I'm seeing more Black faces, like more representation, more women, in the media. But then in the background, I'm saying, okay, who is gaining or who's making the profit out of this? And that's where my thing with this, with our community is, we're putting out so much greatness, but are we getting anything back in order to reinvest back into the community?
I think that's a very good topic to bring up. Our financial, standpoint in this country. Look at what happened with Kanye. That's like a perfect example. Kanye said something anti-Semitic publicly. The Jewish community, they support each other. They are in these high places. They have the financial ability to say, okay, he's done. We are taking him off. If like you saw Adidas cancel with him, I think the next day he was no longer like a billionaire or something.
Literally.
Like, check me on that.
Yeah. 24 hours. He was 24 to 48 hours.
Exactly. How much stuff has he said about the Latino community, about the African and his own community? The fact that he supported Trump, that's anti-Latino right there. And no financial repercussions because, and I also think the media reflects what people want to see. Like 20 years ago, people didn't want to see Black people in the forefront of anything. And now diversity is popular. Diversity gets you likes. That being eco-friendly, being in a position where Gen Z sees you as attractive. So now they are, I think, trying to be more diverse because that's what like reflects what we want to see now. But is that always what the majority is going to want to see 20 years from now?
Yeah, like we have this thing that also we say Afro-Latina is not a trend or Afro-Latinx is not a trend. We're here. We've been here. We've been seen. And to our presence, I think the outscope of everything, the result is going to be positive. Unfortunately, we're going to have to still try harder. I want to see that. You were going to say something, Jalisa. I want to see, as I said, the moment that we put out something, we also gain back.
I feel like with myself being in these industries right now, and like especially like the mainstream industries that are currently run by predominantly white people, I feel like one of the biggest transformations right now is to try to rebuild community brands to be at the same level. I'm a fan of Gatekeep. I feel like it's crazy that we have to wait for a trend from high brand non-diverse spaces to get a voice out of them when we should be able to have that platform opportunity to give that to people, but also be compensated for the same amount of money and have the same amount of riches and just have that level of respect in these fields, in these industries. So I feel. And also, like, which is Kanye and cancel culture, I just feel like, again, cancel culture chooses what to cancel at the end of the day based off social media people that are basically sheep because a lot of time when people are canceling, they're not thinking about really the opinion, what's going on. They're following based on what everyone else feels. And I feel like, it's what people want to cancel at the end of the day. So it's like, what do you guys really consider important at this time when it goes to like canceling? Because if you're going to cancel Kanye and you're going to go as far also take his music off of platforms and do the same thing to R. Kelly and all these other demonic people within the Hollywood and music industry, like there's literally an actor right now that like just confess to physically eating people. Like you guys, like, it's like,
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's a pick and choose situation. So like that's what went through my personally during that like processes, but also and it's true. Like I feel like with the Latinx and Latino community, I feel like a lot of times in the forefront when we are going through something, not a lot of people take and address our situations as mm-hmm. if like I feel like when personally when the Puerto Rico hurricanes was happening, like that's an isolating experience because I'm like, yo, no one else really care about this right now, and not just Puerto Rico, but also like the Dominican Republic got hit too, it always comes out to like Caribbean islands and like what they go through and with our communities is just like, so it's at the end of the day, it's just like I got personally tired of waiting for people to take what seriously or not, and mm-hmm. like us being allowed those riches to take these conversations to the forefront within our own communities to rebuild that. But
yeah, like the conversation said, instead of waiting for you to grab a chair, is creating our own tables. But then it's just also like really, you know, put that in perspective. He lost half of whatever wealth in just a matter of seconds. It's like having that economical power. I'm like, the amount of money that we spend as a community isn't already in the $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if we only can, what we consume and spend, imagine if what we could do if we reinvest back that into the community.
Do you guys know what's it called? Napolera. Do you know what that is?
No.
So that's a brand. And it's a luxury brand. Like it's a Mexican brand, right? So it's this, I think they're two people right now, but they're kind of getting big and they're a luxury product. And people think because Mexican hands made it, it should be cheap.
Right.
They'll pay for the American expensive stuff, right? And this woman who founded it, she's like, just because Mexican people made it doesn't mean you have to spend a dollar on it. Pay what we are owed for this luxury product. And she's very successful right now. And that's one example how literally perspective changes everything.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Definitely. I cannot tell you guys how grateful and happy I am that you guys made it here, you know, that you give us a scoop. And as I said, feel welcome. Always feel welcome. If you guys have anything coming up, I am more than glad that always to promote or sponsor, you know, give you a shout out. And any last thoughts, you know, something that you've, you know, that what would you like for you, you know, there's something that you would have liked to be told or known then, you know, to know now. What exactly, como que dice, que tú hubieras querido saber en el momento que tú querías saber lo que era posible para ti? You know, give somebody that opportunity to say, go for it.
You go, Jalisa, you go first.
Okay.
Because your journey is so important. Like I said, your story matters. So that's why we're here. That's why we're here.
I feel like, if I could just reflect on my journey and give any like advice to anyone is to constantly stick to your truth and just like, have faith regardless of everything that's going on around you. Because I feel like, when we are crumbling and we feel like that we're not elevating, when people are dealing with their own shadows and to trying to be who they are or where they need to be in terms of careers, I'm just like, hold on to this faith, stick to your truth, and just like, have a conversation with yourself. I feel like when you start there, then you start finding the answers to what you need to elevate to where you want to be and what you want to do. Sometimes parts of that path won't be how the way you envision it either. Because one of the biggest things as well is just go in blinded and just go into something that scares you and see how that also helps you grow as a person.
You're preaching, Jalisa. I love it.
Thank you.
Yes, it's true. Go ahead, Leslie.
Something I want to say for anyone who's like artistic, who wants to be an artist, a writer, musician, like anything you want to be, especially for Latinas, Latinos like us, and who live in the United States too. Sometimes, even though we live here, and all we see is kind of like white culture and what white media wants to show us, that is not always like the path for us, because those people will not always accept us in their space. And something that I would say is like, lean into your culture. Like reconnecting can like literally change your life. It has changed like my life. I get excited and feel inspired by, you know, the Dominicans doing what I'm doing, about Latinas doing what I'm doing. And I have seen the most support for me and who I am from my own people, because I genuinely have seen no support when it comes to the other side of the coin. And when you lean in, your culture will always like hug you back.
Yeah.
And I think that's, if there's any advice I could give, is just lean in a little bit more.
I will say that that's pretty much really my personal experience, finding this space and creating this space and amplifying this space for all of us. Estoy encantada. As I say, están más que bienvenidas. And I will remind you guys, when you listen to this podcast, remember, do a follow, a like, a comment, a review, 5 stars if you enjoy this. So I am going to say, see you till the next edition. Adios. Chao, chao. Y como digo, ¿cómo fue? Nos vemos en la próxima.